I paid my income tax today. I'm only one of millions more whose income never was taxed before. A tax I'm very glad to pay. I'm squared up with the USA. You see those bombers in the sky? Rockefeller helped to build them, so did I. I paid my income tax today.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm joined in the studio by William Cohen, author of the new book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. William Cohen is a contributing editor at Fortune and writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, who covers a variety of financial issues. His acclaimed book, House of Cards, A Tale of Hubris and Wretched Excess on Wall Street, details the last days of Bear Stearns and Company. He began his career as an investigative reporter in Raleigh, North Carolina, and went on to work on Wall Street for over a decade and a half, both at Lazard Frere and J.P. Morgan Chase. In 2007, he published The Last Tycoons, The Secret History of Lazard Frere and Company. Welcome to Background Briefing, William Cohen.
Thank you, Ian. Nice to be here.
Today, of course, Standard & Poor's cut the long-term United States debt rating to negative from stable, and that did affect the stock market. We're living in an era now of tremendous focus on deficits and no focus on revenues. In fact, arguably, on this tax day, the reverse is true. We're paying less taxes than ever in history, and yet we have a revenue crisis. Go figure.
Well, number one, I think it's absolutely right that we are focused finally on our fiscal deficits. I mean, we've been living beyond our means, Ian, for well too long now. We expect the government to do more and more for us. We had two wars that were voluntary wars that cost trillions of dollars that have depleted our treasury. So, we're going to have to tighten our collective belts. And that's probably going to mean raising taxes, right? We're going to have to pay more taxes. You know something's up when David Stockman, who was the architect of Reagan's tax cut plan, is now calling for fiscal responsibility and taxes to be raised. If David Stockman and Bill Cohen can agree, then you know that the time has come for fiscal responsibility and for taxes to be raised and for us to get our house in order.
But it seems, though, William Cohen, people are listening to Paul Ryan, who voted for the big Medicare prescription drug increase, one of the most egregious, I suppose, pork barrel spending projects in recent memory, not to mention the two wars that you just mentioned. So who do you take seriously in this debate? Is there anybody?
It's a very good question. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like President Obama, but I mean, for him to extend the Bush tax cuts was fiscally irresponsible. So who do I like? I like David Stockman. I mean, he's not a congressman anymore, and he's not the head of the OMB, but he is talking sense. And, you know, people like, you know, the Budget Commission, Erskine Bowles, I mean, he's talking sense. We need to get, I mean, if you just, we don't even have to go back that far, Ian. You go back to the mid-90s and, you know, my old friend Bob Rubin, I say that, you know, facetiously.
Our audience will be riled up.
Right, facetiously. I mean, but you got to give Clinton and Bob Rubin credit for getting the fiscal house in order. And that resulted in about 5 or 6 years of good times until 9/11. Maybe two good times, but, you know, good things happen when you start getting your fiscal house in order, even if you start showing that you're capable of moving in that direction. Because what this S&P decision means is that it's going to cost us more on higher interest rates on our debt. And that's going to eat up more and more of our budgets and more increase the budget deficits even more. So we need to take steps and big steps. I mean, I for one don't understand why our military budget remains so huge. It seems to me that is an obvious place where we could begin to make cuts.
Well, but though Standard & Poor's, of course, were a part of the problem in 2008, weren't they? So why, you know,
why would anyone believe them now? I mean, they were a huge part of the problem in 2008. So was Moody's. So was Fitch's. A huge part of the problem in that they had the gall to rate AAA securities that were clearly not, and they did so because they were paid by the Wall Street firms to rate these securities AAA. Okay, so that was a very, very bad chapter in the history of the ratings firms. Frankly, nothing has particularly changed. The only thing that has changed is that now there aren't any mortgage-backed securities being issued for them to rate. But take that, be that as it may, you know, they still have basic perceptions and some skill, you would say, with regard to the credit ratings of countries. I would say, why? What took them so long in downgrading the U.S. Treasury securities? I mean, the U.S. fiscal situation has been perilous for years, and now they're just getting around to it. I mean, you know, there was no reason to think, Ian, that what happened in Greece, what happened in Ireland, what happened in Iceland, what happened in Portugal wasn't going to happen here. And now you're seeing the first step towards that. I mean, I think the market has known this for a long time, but now you're going to have higher interest borrowing costs for government debt, and that's not going to help us. That's going to be a big problem. So we need to get our house in order.
Again, I'm speaking with William Cohen, author of Money and Power: How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. Your latest book just out, William Cohen, is about a company that has pretty much become the kind of Darth Vader of Wall Street, right?
I think that's very well said. I'm sure it pains them to think of it this way, but that they have become the firm on Wall Street that everybody loves to hate. And, you know, the New York Times had an interesting article today about, you know, whether Lloyd Blankfein's days are numbered. You know, I would never have thought that his days should be numbered or would be numbered, because basically he did a very good job of running the firm for the last 4.5 years. But they can't seem to get beyond this narrative that they are the Darth Vader of Wall Street. And maybe they won't be able to get beyond it until Lloyd Blankfein falls on his sword. I mean, how many times do you see that where, you know, the companies can't get beyond the narrative that they want to get beyond until, you know, they turn the page with their CEO, even though it may not be particularly fair? I mean, obviously, they brought this on themselves. They have not been honest about their behavior during this whole episode, even though the documents that I used to write this book make very clear what they did during this crisis. And by the way, they were smarter than everyone else. They should be, in some ways, if you like this kind of thing, they should be applauded for their ability to see trouble coming and take action against it. But now they just obfuscate and aren't coming clean with the American people.
Well, the American people got a glimpse of this private world where there was this contempt shown for the very customers that they were serving, where I recall in the Senate testimony, Senator Levin used the term shitty deal about umpteen times.
Famously so.
But you've gone really into it. I mean, you've got
totally
all of those 900...
I've done an explication de texte on these 900 pages and interviewed all the people, many of the people involved with writing the documents. And I think I've laid out for the first time in, I hope, clear narrative that people can follow along what happened and why and how Goldman was able to come up with this idea of betting against the mortgage market, how they executed it, and how they benefited from it. The only thing, that's all crystal clear to me. It's absolutely riveting and absolutely crystal clear. The only thing I can't figure out is why Lloyd Blankfein in his testimony in front of Levin's committee a year ago denied that they had done this. Why he would prefer to act like they were no different than any other firm, that they weren't smarter than every other firm, which they were. Why he would prefer that scenario to telling the truth. I can't figure it out. And that's probably something that Senator Levin is scratching his head about, because we know at the end of last week he supposedly referred to the Justice Department these executives for perjury, I believe.
But that's not to let them off the hook for the earlier part. They were a part of making money on the way up. They were just smart enough to get out of it before it collapsed on the way down.
And it's even worse than what you just said, because yes, while they were not one of the largest underwriters of mortgage-backed securities, they were one of the top six, I believe. After they had made the decision, Ian, in December of 2006 to go short the mortgage market, they kept selling these mortgage-backed securities to investors all over the world. So with their own money, they were making this big proprietary bet against the mortgage market. At the same time, they continued to package up these mortgages and sell them off as AAA-rated investments all around the world. I don't know quite what that is. That is not a good thing. It's either immoral, it's illegal, it's unethical, maybe it should be illegal. It doesn't feel right to me. If I were running Goldman Sachs, it wouldn't feel right to me. But they can, you know, as he did in front of the Levin hearing, Lloyd Blankfein and others can justify this kind of behavior. I think that's very troubling.
Again, I'm speaking with William Cohan, author of Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. And clearly, Goldman Sachs is ruling the United States. We can get into the world because we know about their role in the Greek, dressing up this Greek debt.
Well, they have offices all around the world, so they're doing business all over the place.
But what I find particularly egregious at the moment, and I'm concerned about the ideological debate in Washington going on about the deficit, which I think is largely fraudulent, and it may lead us to a double-dip recession, because Economics 101 tells you that in a recession, you stimulate the economy, you don't cut spending. So that's one issue. But my understanding of the thing that's got our precarious recovery, it most threatens our precarious recovery, is the fact that the average American consumer is being slammed on food prices and on gasoline prices. And there's a direct link to Wall Street and to Goldman Sachs in the extent to which speculation is gaming the price of oil far in excess of any of these external problems like Libya, which is just a blip on the overall radar.
You have really, you know, these are intractable problems. I mean, we have serious economic and fiscal problems in this country. There's no question that President Obama was handed a very bad deck of cards. He has probably played them as best as he can at the moment, but that does not mean we are not still facing serious problems that he has to grapple with. And, you know, the end of the Bush administration, the beginning of the Obama administration were very clear about wanting to reestablish the status quo on Wall Street as quickly as possible. They did that. They re-equitized the banks. They spent $700 billion in the TARP funds. Wall Street firms made $150 billion in bonuses, paid out $150 billion in bonuses last year. Where's the succor for Main Street? Where's the help? I mean, people have higher gas prices, food prices. Anytime you look around, they're paying higher prices. Jobs are only now beginning to trickle in, and who knows really the nature of those jobs? Who knows the nature of how many people have just given up looking because they're so frustrated? Why can't small businesses in this country get the kind of access to loans? You know, J.P. Morgan Chase is willing to write a $20 billion bridge loan so that AT&T can buy T-Mobile, the Deutsche Telekom's wireless business. But where's the small loan, the small business loan, so that somebody the small businesses in this country are the companies that are hiring the most people, are growing the most. They need to have access to capital so that they can grow. But that's just not happening. So the people at the top of the food chain are still living great. I mean, honestly, you walk around New York, you know, the restaurants are packed, the real estate prices are high, both for commercial and consumer real estate, personal real estate. I mean, there's no effect, it seems to me, on people in New York. But you go out into the rest of the country, and there are still huge problems that, you know, again, are really intractable because we don't have the fiscal wherewithal anymore to help people anymore. And we're going to have to make choices. It's, you know, the old guns and butter debate. And I think we're there.
Well, William Cohan, your new book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World, takes you inside that world, inside that mentality, and you are unique in as much as you've been both at one of the leading financial journalists, but you've also been on the street working in investment banking. But I still shake my head and wonder about these two Americas and these two Americans, you know. How can people who are causing this pain to their fellow Americans consider themselves patriots, let alone sleep well at night?
Honestly, I don't know how they do it. I mean, they do live in a bit of a bubble, in a cocoon. We know that. Fitzgerald said, whatever, the rich are different than you and me. I'm sure I'm getting that wrong. But they just think they're entitled to the amount of money they get paid. I don't understand why they get paid as much as they do. They don't even think about it. They just think this is the way it has to be, that they are somehow special and part of a super race that deserves this. I mean, I am totally nonviolent, least violent person that exists. I don't even touch a gun, but I don't understand why there hasn't been riots in the streets about this. I mean, this is a clear example of a preventable crisis. This did not have to happen, and yet no one has gone to jail. No one is being even prosecuted. their boat has been floated again while the rest of Main Street is still underwater. Everything's upside down. I don't understand it. And I think people understand this on some level, but, you know, they're giving these guys a major league break. Is it because in our heart of hearts, people still aspire to be like them and they don't want to tear down something that is part of their dreams? I don't know. It just defies logic. I mean, I don't have a good answer for it.
But what we do know is that they've largely bought our politics on both sides, both the Democrats and the Republicans. And I take it that that probably adds to their kind of contempt, because they think they're more important. Because if you can hire somebody, you must therefore assume that you're above them, right?
Well, and you would have thought that the Dodd-Frank law would have begun to redress some of this. But, you know, all the Dodd-Frank law did was complicate it, because it forced new regulations to be written and new studies to be undertaken. And so that's all happening now when everyone's gone back to sleep and crawled under their rocks again. So while everyone else is asleep, you can be sure that the lobbyists for Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and J.P. Morgan Chase are deep in the shorts of the folks at the SEC who are writing these new regulations to make sure they come out just the way they want. By the way, as they've always done. So nothing has changed. Again, the status quo has been reestablished firmly on Wall Street. I really thought there was a chance for total reform of this system. Of course, typically Bill Cohen naivete, but unfortunately this window has closed and now we're back to propping up the status quo. And so once again, Wall Street gets the rewards and everybody else, you know, is stuck with trying to figure out what's just been happening to them.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today in the studio and for your new book, William Cohen, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. Maybe your book will get people out in the streets. I think it will.
Well, I'm nonviolent, Ian, but I would like people to really understand what happened here, and this book lays it out, and it's not an appealing story.
Again, I've been speaking to William Cohen, author of the new book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. He has been a contributing editor at Fortune, a writer for Vanity Fair and the New York Times, and he's also had a career on Wall Street with Lazard Frere and J.P. Morgan Chase. Again, the latest book, Money and Power, How Goldman Sachs Came to Rule the World. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about how sugar is considered now to be a poison and a toxin.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad.